Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Center for Agriculture building in Sycamore, Illinois, DeKalb County, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of February 2017. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mark Gold from Top Third. Chuck Shelby will be here too to take a look at the cash grain side of the marketplace. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll remind you to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If not ever been, this is the year you should come. Tickets are just $30. A whole bevy of our analysts will be there. In fact, most of the folks that you hear on the air, plus a bunch of the agricultural economists from the U of I. Tickets again at willag.org are just $30 for the All-Day Ag Outlook. Stay with us now. We'll get to the commodity markets and how they closed in just a moment.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check out the numbers as they finished in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. March corn at $3.70¾, up 2¼. May at $3.78½, 2½ higher. July at $3.85½, up 2¼. And December corn at $3.97½, a penny and a quarter higher. March beans at $10.58¾, up 16 cents. We'll ask Mark Gold about that, as tomorrow the USDA at 11 a.m. will release Central Time its next update of the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. May futures at 10.69¼, up 16, unusual for a gain the day before this event. July futures at 10.76¾, up 15¼. And November beans at $10.28¼, 8¾ higher. Bean oil futures 39 cents higher at $34.69. The bean meal at $3.41.20, up $5.30. March soft red winter wheat at $4.32½, a penny and ¾ higher. July at $4.56, the new crop up ¾, and July hard red at $4.66½, up 2½ cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the February 90 cents lower at $116.77½. Feeders in the March at $122.30, up $1.92½, rather down $1.92½. And lean hogs at $73.35 in the Febs, 97½ cents higher. Aprils were down 45 cents at $71.72½.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what some of the other markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil is 19 cents higher at $52.36 a barrel. Ethanol futures at $1.60 even, up 2⅛ cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.63¾, a penny and 4 cents higher. In gasoline on the RBOB at $1.55¼, 6⅙ cents higher. Natural gas at $3.13¾, up 0.3 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 19,998, down 20 points. The U.S. dollar at 100.26, that's up 0.015. And gold futures for the day at $1,238.10, up $3.90 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Partly cloudy skies, a low of 14 tonight, on a wind out of the west to the northwest at 15 to 25 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 25. That west-northwest wind will stay with us at 15 to 25. And tomorrow evening, partly cloudy skies during the evening. They'll be followed up by cloudy skies throughout the night, a low of 18 degrees. Winds will turn to the south at 10 to 20 overnight on Thursday. Partly cloudy skies and windy on Friday with a high of 46 degrees.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon, the 8th day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling today. We're in Sycamore at the Center for Agriculture. That's the Farm Bureau building in DeKalb. Made some presentations earlier today with some of the names you probably recognize from the programs, including Chuck Shelby and Mike Suzzolo. Thanks to them for coming in. Rich Nelson was here from Allendale as well. This afternoon, about this time, in fact, Mark Gold should be up on stage. We've got him over the noon hour to talk a little bit about this marketplace. And futures have not finished, of course, trading today. For this time, when we air it, we'll have Mark. We're up another 16 cents over the noon hour in soybeans. That seems surprising the day before a USDA report for soybeans. Why is it happening, in your opinion?
Well, it's a good question. We're up 16 in old crop and up about 8 and 9 in the new crop. Considering the funds are already heavily long in this market, the day before a report, as you said, it's kind of surprising to see it. We haven't seen any new export sales announcements out of China. They came back from their week-long holiday. A lot of traders, including myself, were thinking maybe we'll see some new business here. Nothing's been reported at any rate. So that's been a little disappointing. The crude oil's tanked. So why would the beans rally now? Unless the Chinese are buying it quietly under the radar somehow, it's really hard to figure. The funds are long about 170,000 contracts. Why they would want to press that up here now, to me, is a bit of a surprise. But we do know that as the funds have been buying, the commercials in South America are taking big advantage of it and selling their beans now at, you know, 10.60 in that range. And they've been sellers on every one of these rallies.
Tomorrow morning, USDA will release the monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. They come out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Folks can see those numbers in a couple of different ways. If you just want to type WASD into the search engine, it'll pop up. That's WASDE. Or more importantly, you can visit willag.org. I'll post my Twitter account there. The handle, if you happen to use Twitter, is at Commodity Week. But it'll just be there on the web, and you can see those numbers within a few seconds, maybe minutes of the time that they come out, depending on how quickly I can get to them. One of the numbers I think the trade has been thinking a lot about is not the domestic numbers for soybeans in particular, but the global carryout numbers for soybeans. Might this be one of those places that the trade's thinking, hey, wait a second, maybe that number's going to go lower?
I find that hard to believe. Everybody's been looking at Argentina. We know we've lost a fair amount of tonnage there. Is it 3, 4, 5 million metric tons? It may be. They've had some serious issues, not only with the wet and flooding conditions, but in certain parts it's actually been pretty dry. So we know that their crop isn't going to be up to snuff. We've been assuming that the Brazilian crop was going to be somewhere between 98 and 102 million metric tons. Could it be significantly larger than that? Many of us believe it is a big, big crop, and it could be 105, 106 million metric tons, maybe more. So we believe not only in Brazil, but in Uruguay and Paraguay, we're pretty much offsetting a lot of the problems in Argentina. And again, are we going to really decrease those world carryout numbers? My guess is maybe a touch, but not as much as a lot of people would like it to be.
So maybe just kind of a wash between the two nations.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a wash between Argentina and Brazil. We're going to certainly look at our demand on the domestic side. You know, are we going to pump in more soybean exports and lower these carryouts a little bit? And I think that's reasonable. Maybe we'll knock it 10 million bushels off the carryout. But, you know, again, these funds are heavily long. We've got absolutely no reason to think that American farmers aren't going to plant another 4 to 5 million acres of beans. We've got potential trade issues with the Chinese. I have no idea, and particularly before this report, why the funds would want to be expanding their positions out here.
The Dow and the crude oil, maybe?
Well, the Dow's at record highs. So, you know, normally if they're going to blow out of the Dow, then they'll come into commodities. Why they want it here, again, is a bit of a mystery. The crude oil keeps making these new lows. We're down to 51 and change today, so that's certainly not supportive to the bean market. So, again, I have no idea what these funds are thinking, but here's what I do know. The funds give the American farmer a great opportunity to market grain, not only when they're getting long and they're long up to their gills, but when they're short, also another marketing opportunity for the American farmer. So I've always said, I want to take advantage of the funds before they take advantage of us. And we've got the funds long here, giving us good prices. If we can get November beans back to 1030, 1040, certainly buying some puts to protect the downside. If you can buy a $10 short-dated put for 25 cents, throw 25 cents to protect this bottom through the end of June, in my opinion, makes an awful lot of sense.
Occasionally, we do talk about short-dated puts on the show, but you probably better explain what the difference between a short-dated put and a put might be.
Right. You know, most people are familiar with November bean puts or December corn puts. A short-dated put is based off of the futures price in November. So it's based off that November contract, but that option will expire, like a July short-dated put will expire at the end of June, but it's based on the November bean price. So, for example, if we're concerned that we're going to have more acres, possibly a wet spring and maybe some delayed corn plantings going into beans, if we have any concerns about trade issues with the new president, between now and the end of June, you can be protected at a $10 floor for about 25 cents a bushel. If I'm wrong, we don't plant more beans, the funds keep buying it and take their positions up to 300,000 contracts, and we wind up with $12 or $13 beans, you'll lose the 25 cents you paid for that put option, but you still have the grain to sell at much higher prices. So to me, it's a risk management tool that you can't ignore. And to be able to protect $10 beans this year for a quarter beats the heck out of where we were a year ago when we were looking at 880 beans a year ago.
You pay for time value in the puts. Does this mean that the short dated is generally cheaper in cost than the regular put might be?
Yeah, that's absolute. If we go out to November, the time value is going to make that option significantly pricier. Maybe not necessarily double, but it'll be much more pricey, 40, 45 cents in that range. So when you're managing using options, knowing that 85% of options can expire worthless, in general, the less money you spend, the better. So here, it's our decision at Top Third that this $10 put over the next 4 months has a great potential either to see the cash market move significantly higher or the markets move significantly lower. I just don't believe we're going to be sitting here at around 1025 a bushel. I think we're going to be at least a buck and a half higher or lower by the time we get to the end of June.
Will USDA change any of the numbers tomorrow for corn?
Well, I think they're going to knock the corn carry out down a little bit. Exports have been incredibly strong. Ethanol demand off the charts. So I would be surprised if they didn't lower it. And again, the funds right now are even in the corn. They've come out of some pretty short positions, 70, 80,000 contracts. They're now about even. If we can close the nearby corn contract, the March corn, over 372, particularly tomorrow after the report, over the 200-day moving average, I think that's going to be a powerful signal that we are losing corn acres and the market needs to rally.
And by how much, in your opinion, if those numbers are where you think they're going to come in?
Well, I believe if we close over 372, we can look at a quick 30-cent rally in this market. That'll take old crops somewhere to $4. That'll take new crop to somewhere around 425. And I think those are reasonable levels. You know, keep in mind, American farmers love to see $4 printed on a ticket, or they like to see $17 printed on a bean ticket at the elevator. Never put in an order at the elevator to sell at that exact price. Put it in a couple of cents below. Everybody else is going to be at $4. If you want to sell some old crop corn, put in the order at $3.98. And don't be penny wise and pound foolish.
Again, what numbers are you thinking about for the futures prices, the March and the December?
Yeah, March corn, if we can get that up to $3.98, and if we can get December corn up to around $4.25.
So you have to subtract your basis, and then you're still...
That's
so
basis on the futures
contracts. Right, so you have to subtract your basis from the 398, and then that's where you want them to go ahead and make some cash sales, potentially.
Some cash sales. We don't want to get, particularly on the corn, we don't want to get too aggressive on the cash sales out here. On the beans, we do want to get more aggressive, and we certainly, when I was at the Top Producer Conference giving a speech here 2 weeks ago, I said, in my opinion, the most important marketing tool or tip I can give the American farmer today is to be protecting these new crop bean prices right now. I think that's where the greatest risk is in the short run, not so much in the corn. And again, I believe that we have some legitimate case, not only in the corn, but the wheat as well.
And you want more protection just other than the crop insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to be truly become a better marketer, you have to combine good crop insurance with a marketing plan. So many guys think if they have one or the other, they don't need the other. Well, that's not true. In my opinion, you need to blend it to have effective coverage as a marketer, and that's what we want to do.
What about the wheat market? This has been an interesting one, a very poor one. The United States at record low numbers of acreage for the last 100 years. However, wheat basis is often very wide. LDPs paid, and LDPs, remember LDPs? Those are the same LDPs that you remember. They were paid last fall in western Kansas.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, we've had an overabundance of wheat around the world. If you look at how big these crops have been, France is going to have a huge crop, Australia, a huge crop. Our acres are down, which gives me confidence. You know, we're at $4 wheat. We've been to $15 wheat in Kansas City and $13 in Chicago, even higher in Minneapolis. So we're certainly toward the bottom end of this range, even though wheat is cheap, and there's still a lot of wheat around. World carryouts are huge. U.S. carryout is huge. But the funds are short about 120,000 contracts of wheat. We've got a potential spring weather issue. The weather hasn't been great for the winter crop that's out there. We've seen, you know, some thaws, some freezes, some snow cover, too much, a lot of wind. You know, it hasn't certainly been a perfect year for this wheat crop. So long term, I expect that if we can get anything bullish in the corn, the funds are going to need to start covering these short positions. If we can get nearby wheat, the March wheat over 440, I believe that'll be the first indication that these funds have got a problem, and maybe a serious problem.
Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you. Anytime.
Mark Gold is with Top Third, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can hear him again in full on our website. Just look for the Closing Market Report at willag.org. Look for us in iTunes. NPR One carries the program as well. And you can always find us in the Google Play Store. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Commodity Week. Hey, don't forget the All-Day Agricultural Outlook is coming up about a month from now. In fact, on Tuesday, the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are available online right now at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You can find the full day's agenda as well. The All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House. Don't miss it. Buy your tickets today.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Chuck Shelby is with us. He joined us earlier today in DeKalb at the Center for Agriculture and First National Bank's event. Thanks first, Chuck, for coming in and speaking. We do appreciate that.
Good crowd here today, Todd. It's always nice to go into different parts of the country and see how farmers are thinking. And a big subject today was corn and bean acres next year. And a lot of Illinois guys probably aren't going to switch much, but you look at the fringe areas, that's probably where it's going to change a lot.
Well, let's start there. What do you think will happen?
Well, I think cotton's something that's not getting much attention, but it's a good price. The guys we talked to in the South are probably going to make some switching down there. And then when I look at the Western states, they just don't have the ability to grow the kind of corn we do. And I think it's easier to switch over to beans, a lot less money out of the pocket. And certainly the weather conditions out there with a lot of snow on the ground may lead to prevent plant or may be a reason why they plant more beans.
I suppose it also doesn't hurt that Nebraska led the nation in soybean yields last year.
Absolutely. You know, that's always an attraction to farmers. You like that crop that had a really high yield. And most farmers are pleased with their bean yields. But as we talked about at the meeting, in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, corn's pretty much king. And, you know, we're a lot more comfortable, I think, with our corn yields than our bean yields.
Corn is king. There's still a lot of corn yet to be marketed. What should producers be looking forward to in the next month and a half or next 6 months in order to make those final sales?
Well, I think we've seen the corn market slowly climb out of the hole. In our areas in Indiana, we are seeing a pretty good basis. It's kind of interesting. Guys maybe haven't moved as much corn. But I always look at it as from a producer standpoint, we need to or like to move corn before we go to the field and plant. it's not really that far away as we're in kind of the middle of February here. So I think guys that need to move corn got an opportunity to let it go. Looking forward down the road, you either let it go before you go plant or you wait on it till summertime.
5 hours south of where we are today in McLeansboro, I listened to Kim Holzapfel from TGM last night tell the crowd there that is it related to basis in soybeans. We mentioned there were a lot of soybeans in the western part of the Corn Belt, that trains were now coming into Archer Daniels Midland in Decatur from the west, and that was going to really put a kind of a hold on what they could see in the way of basis movement for them, even if they should see much appreciation in the price of soybeans. This morning, four analysts, and I think Mark Gold is in this crew as well, I talked to him earlier, were all suggesting old crop soybean sales need to be made and new crop soybean sales still need to be made. You're among that crew.
I think so, simply from a profit standpoint. You know, it's been tough to make much money on the farm in the last year or so. It's offered an opportunity to do that. I do, you know, realize, and we look back at last year when beans looked like a great price at $9, and, you know, they went higher than that by far. So I guess the strategy of, you know, comfort, if guys really feel uncomfortable doing that, some call options out there. The acreage report is going to be big, anticipating right now that we are going to have a lot more bean acres. But wouldn't it be shocking if the corn acres didn't shrink that much and bean acres didn't grow? So you got to be flexible here, but profitability-wise, I'm willing to take the money and make those sales both on old and new.
Do you protect them in any way yet?
I think that's an individual decision. You know, when you put it in the bank, it's a moneymaker for a lot of guys. With tight margins, do they want to spend the money? We generally talk to each farmer and ask them if that's what they want to do. And I think there's some merit to it, but it's an individual basis in our minds.
My inclination is that many farmers will say, okay, I'm going to be, especially if I'm in the state of Illinois, in the top two-thirds state in across much of the Corn Belt, the primary Corn Belt, I'm going to be 80 or 85% coverage for revenue protection in one form or another. That's enough for soybeans, maybe enough for corn, but really what I want to market for new crop is that next 15% that I have that protected. Is that far enough along for soybean sales in your opinion?
I think if a guy's willing to be flexible, when we look at the you know, banking situation and you look at, again, profit on the farm, you can lock in some profit there. So I think I'd be aggressive in soybean sales for contracting or using some put options or some hedge to rise. But always be in the back of your mind that it's a longer way to go. We saw what happened when palm oil caught fire last year, took the bean oil market up, and took beans up. So be flexible, but sell for profit. Use your crop insurance. Take advantage of that because you're paying for it.
Thanks so much, Chuck.
Thank you, Todd. Pleasure to be here today.
Chuck Shelby, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. As a Small Business Administration preferred lender, Busey partners with businesses and entrepreneurs who bring vibrancy to the community. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Have you picked up your tickets yet for the All-Day Ag Outlook? They are on sale right now. Don't wait any longer. Visit willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. The event comes up on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday, as usual. Check it out at All-Day Ag Outlook on our website at willag.org.
It's National Molasses Bar Day. Up until the 1880s, molasses was the most popular sweetener in the U.S. because it was much cheaper than refined sugar. But by 1919, U.S. per capita consumption of white sugar was twice what it was in 1880, with most Americans completely switching from molasses to granulated white and brown sugar. By the way, in January of 1919, a huge vat of molasses at the Purity Distilling Company in Boston exploded. What came to be known as the Great Molasses Flood killed 21 people and spilled 2 million gallons of molasses into the streets. On this day in agricultural history in 1802, Simpson Grafton of Massachusetts patented what he called an 8-day improved timepiece, better known as the banjo clock, a small inexpensive clock which could be purchased by those without means in the New World. In 1878, Ellis Fryestad, a Swedish botanist, he developed the first system used to classify fungi. In 1886, Wilhelm Koppers was born. This cultural anthropologist developed theories on the origins of society based on studies of hunter-gatherer tribes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Get your tickets for the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House. It's the 7th day of March. They're just $30. Online at willag.org, willag.org. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us. Tell me about weather in South America.
Conditions in South America are mostly good right now. Brazil has increased some of its production numbers, at least different organizations from Brazil have done so, and I think that is exactly right. We've been talking about better than usual crop development conditions in Brazil almost all the season long, even while the marketplace was focused on problems in the northeast and perhaps some below average precipitation that occurred across some of the crop areas over recent weeks. But Brazil gets way too much rain in a typical year, and whenever they can get their rain amounts to drop and yet still have a regular occurrence of precipitation, they usually get their best yields, and I think that's exactly what's happening right now. Now, the northeast corner of the country certainly has lost some production potential, but that area only produces about 4% of the soybeans and 4% of the corn crop, and it certainly isn't a loss, so we're talking about 1 or 2% of the overall crop may be hurt up there, and that suggests that, of course, Brazil is probably going to still have a tremendous crop because the yields are so high from other areas in the country. In the meantime, in Argentina, everything still looks to be very good, at least in the short-term part of the forecast. And of course, we've had a very volatile year with too much moisture at times, too little at times, and the fluctuations from one extreme to the other has certainly been enough to hurt the crop production potential there. But weather from this point forward through the rest of their growing season is expected to be much more stable, much less volatile, and much more favorable for crop evolution. And so whatever damage has been done is done. We're not going to feed upon that anymore. We're going to continue to see generally improving conditions. So even though Argentina's got a smaller crop, the huge crop coming out of Brazil is not only going to counter some of the losses in northeastern Brazil, but it's also going to counter some of the losses in Argentina. So looking at the South America total crop this year, it's still going to be big. The situation in the U.S. continues to be a little tenuous in hard red winter wheat country because of recent temperatures getting into the 70s and even some 80s. And over the next two or three days, we're going to see more of that. 80-degree temperatures will occur across many areas as far north as Kansas and parts of Colorado. However, soil temperatures today are not warm enough to really support any kind of serious crop development. So that will likely not lead us into any problem as long as we get into colder weather again. And that is in the forecast. Next week, we should see freezes back across most of the production region. In fact, we'll probably see some single-digit readings tomorrow morning in Nebraska, but those areas are snow-covered. And it looks like the rest of the U.S. is in relatively good shape. We're going to continue to monitor the southeastern corner of the country because we believe that some dryness may come back into that area over time. It's still bitterly cold this week in Russia and parts of Ukraine, as well as Canada and the northern U.S. plains, but all of this bitter cold is expected to begin to abate as we move into next week, and that should take the pressure off of some of these winter crops, although there has always been plenty of snow around to protect them.
That's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I urge you to visit our website, willag.org. There you can listen to all of our agricultural programming and purchase your tickets. They're just $30 for the all-day agriculture outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.